Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's about that time on a Saturday morning when we talk cars, more specifically the problems you may be having with your car, your truck, your van, and you need to bring it in for service, but you might want to know ahead of the game what could be wrong with it. Well, that's why we have had the help, and we appreciate the help we get from Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. He happens to be, among other things, an ASE certified technician, a master technician there, and kind of runs the joint, too, if I may say. And he's given up his time every Saturday to help us out here. Nick, good morning. Hope you had a good week.
Yeah, good morning, Danny. It was a great week, and it looks like the forecast is warming up next week, so More to come, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. People may be thinking spring and summer and getting their vehicles ready for service. I was looking at various videos, car repair type videos, and this one happened to be about one that you and I talk about quite frequently from time to time, and that's if you're going to buy a used car, maybe you're going to buy one for your kids, your grandkids, whatever the case may be. And the best thing to do before you spend any money is to get that thing checked out. What do we kind of call that there at Lloyd's?
Well, it's essentially a used vehicle inspection, and I can't stress enough having a third party take a look at that vehicle that kind of knows the ins and outs of how a vehicle works and what to look for, some of the maintenance stuff. And, you know, unfortunately, from time to time, people might try to pull a fast one on you. So it's kind of our job to, you know, be critical, look at it, you know, maybe ask a few questions just to make sure you're buying what, as advertised, I guess.
Yeah, and if the person or the outfit said, no, I don't think I'll let you do that, that might be a red flag, and you can move on to another option. Again, if you want to ask Nick a question, here's the number. I want to give you that for either a phone call. You can call it in and chat with Nick if you like, or if it's easier, just send him a text, 651-461-9226. Looking at a text that came in a couple of minutes ago, Nick, 2003 Toyota Sienna. Every now and then, while driving, mostly on a curve to the left, it feels as if something is trying to grab the steering wheel and make it go to the left just a bit more. It doesn't happen all the time. It lasts about a second, if that. Do you have any idea what might cause that?
Well, I would say a good thorough inspection there. My first thought is something with the steering, you know, something with the linkage, the power steering pump, the rack and pinion, a lot of moving parts there. You have a hydraulic system creating a pressure that gives you assist, that makes the steering easier, but you have a lot of linkage connecting the steering mechanisms to the wheel. So there could be something binding there a little bit, or something might be a little bit worn and loose, so it's kind of shifting on you, giving that sensation. My other thought is maybe something with the brakes. On this turn, if you're applying the brakes at all, and there's something wrong with that caliper or the slides of the caliper, maybe making a grab a little bit harder than the right side might make it want to favor that. So I would say anytime you feel something when you're driving where like the steering or the braking feels not like it should, that's probably a priority you should have that looked at sooner than later. The last thing we want to have something fail and leave you stranded on the side of the road.
Nick, I remember a couple of times, in fact, it still can happen, and I might be concerned, wait a minute, why is this pulling to the left or right? And it never, my car never does it on a flat road. But I notice if there's like a dip, if there's like a center of the that particular lane is got like a hump, and you can kind of drift to either right or left. And all the time, it wasn't the car, it wasn't the tires, it wasn't the brakes, it wasn't the steering, it was the road. Have you ever experienced that yourself?
Well, the roads are pretty much designed to have a crown in the center.
Yeah,
kind of allows for the water to dissipate off the sides. Obviously, when there's imperfections with the roads, which we have in our state, you know, like with the winter and summer cycles, you know, the heat, you know, the heating and freezing and thawing and all that, the roads will have some potholes, some dips, some cracks in the pavement. And a lot of times the vehicle will follow the road. So make sure you're paying attention. You don't want to go the wrong way or they're off into the ditch. So, you know, it's an important thing to know that, you know, you're in control of the car. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. And sometimes you'll even see a sign that says dip because you might be in an area where the underlayment is not sufficient. So it keeps kind of dipping or deteriorating there. So just be careful and keep your car on the road.
Nick, I want to alert our listeners that our time goes by so quickly. Nick will take his leave about a half hour from now. So, again, our time is brief, and it goes by rather quickly. So don't wait. Any kind of a car question, let's hear from you earlier rather than later. 651-461-9226. Texter says, my Jeep Compass gets a film on the inside of the windshield any time I use my defrost system. What could that be from?
Well, but my first thought is it may be something with the heater core, which has coolant in it. If that fine mist of coolant is making its way to the windshield, it'll leave a film that can be kind of greasy and very difficult to clean. If that is the case, you should have that looked at because that can become kind of a bit dangerous. You know, on one of those spring days, you get some moisture in the air and humidity in the air, and that windshield is kind of fogging up on you. You want to be able to clear that. And if you're adding that coolant to that defrost, that's just going to make matters worse. So if it is a substance that's really hard to clean and clear off, there's likely some coolant making its way into that airway there, and that needs to be assessed and repaired.
Let's talk a little bit about that heater core, that term. I recall years later hearing something called a heater radiator. I went, oh, okay, that kind of describes it a little better. Tell us what that heater core is, roughly where it's located, and what it does.
Well, if you have an older home that has radiators, if you know what they are, kind of the same idea. We have hot water or hot coolant circulating through, and that heat's dissipating from there. So the engine creates the heat. The cooling system moves that coolant around by the way of the water pump. It uses the radiator in the front of the vehicle to maintain and control the engine temperature, but it also has a set of hoses that make their way back into the vehicle where there's a miniature radiator that we call heater core. The fan that we control, the fan speeds, blows that air across the heater core to give us heat in the summer, in the winter months, and the same thing with the evaporator in the summer months to give us the air conditioning. So there's a little box, most often on the passenger side of the vehicle, that has the ductwork that comes out on our floor, the vent, and the defrost. At the base of that, there'll be a little motor, and inside of there, there's some channels and some flaps that either send that air by the heater core or the evaporator to give us the appropriate temperature.
Whenever there's an issue with a heater core, I remember the old days, if I would find a puddle on the passenger side floor, that might be an issue. Does that still happen? Do you see that at all?
That can happen. However, most likely if you have moisture on the floor in the vehicle and it's like water-based, what we see is that the drain tube for in the summer months, you know, when we have that air conditioning running, it creates that moisture off the evaporator. That's designed to drip out the vehicle onto the ground. Well, sometimes if that drain is restricted or plugged, the moisture will collect and it'll make its way into the floor of the vehicle. So that's something we more often see in the summer months where people complain that their passenger floor is soaking wet and it did not leave the window open. And we'll investigate a little bit and find that drain is plugged up.
How do you, I know we've talked about that over the years, how do you clean that particular drain? Can a homeowner, a do-it-yourselfer clean it themselves?
Possibly. You need to be very, very careful. You need to locate the drain. We oftentimes use a little compressed air. Sometimes we can, you know, you have to remove the blower motor itself to kind of clean out the debris. Sometimes you can remove the cabin filter, gain access. They're all a little different, but if you have access to compressed air, you have to be very careful not to overpressurize that because you don't want to blow the tube off the heater box or you don't want to crack anything. So you have to be, you know, cautious and careful as you proceed because you don't want to make it from a simple repair into a complex one where you're removing a lot of parts to make the repair.
Yeah, good point. Nick, hang on. We'll take a bit of a break, a quick one, but still invite our listeners to join in. If you have any kind of a car care question, you can ask Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive that very question. But do it earlier rather than later. 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830, this is WCCO. And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show. If you have any kind of a car care question, or maybe you want to ask a technician, an auto tech question you always wanted to ask, whatever the car care question may be, do it now. 651-461-9226. If you're just joining us, Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive on Grand Avenue is with us. Nick, I'm thinking, too, for folks that may be listening to the show and they decide, I got to get my car in for service, or my car, my truck, my van, whatever the case. How do we find you guys at Lloyd's?
Yeah, that's pretty easy, actually. You can give us a call, 651-228-1316. If you're in St. Paul, we're at 982 Grand Avenue, which is on the corner of Grand and Chatsworth. And then finally, if you need more information, I'd appreciate if you checked out our website, which is lloydsautomotive.net.
We do that often, and we'll advise folks of giving that information before you leave us, Nick, about 7:45 or so. Looking at a bunch of text messages. By the way, if you want to call in your question, that's good, too. Same number, 651-461-9226. Texter says this, Nick, how often should I have my tires rotated? Where I get my oil changed, I can get rotation, but they tell me I don't need it. Well, that can happen from time to time because Lloyd's, you guys don't offer, you know, you guys check my tires, but it isn't necessary all the time, or what? Am I wrong?
No, that's a fair assessment. You know, tires are different, vehicles are different, driving habits are different. So when somebody thinks they may need a tire rotation, we'll inspect the tread of the tires. You know, typically we want the best tread on the drive wheel, so if it's a front-wheel drive vehicle. But we also want to keep them rotated so we can keep them wearing evenly, whether it's from the shoulders of the tires or the tread itself. My truck that I referred to in the past, you know, has kind of these more of an all-train type tread on them. So I actually have them rotated every single oil change to keep them running smoothly, keep them hitting the roads flat, so therefore there's not a lot of road noise. So there's a lot of things to take in consideration, you know, the tread depth, the way they're wearing, road noise. So when you take your vehicle in, you're due for a regular service, mention the tires, have them inspected. They might call for rotation. They might call for an alignment. And with an alignment, what we're doing is readjusting the suspension and steering linkage after a winter, after a few potholes. A lot of times those things can get knocked out of place. And so we can put it on the alignment rack, essentially, and we take measurements and figure out if there's anything that's out of specification and make those adjustments.
How does the technician know there's a need for an alignment if they're just in for an oil change, let's say?
Well, either based on tire wear with a visual inspection, also based on a test drive, too. If you're noticing something doesn't feel right, the way the tire or the steering's returning, or have maybe a wandering feel or a darting feel, is telling us that maybe the toe or one of those adjustments with the camber or caster might be out of specification. So we would, you know, notify the customer, you know, get approval to, you know, go one step further to see what's going on.
Yeah, and why not? All right, looking at a text, speaking of steering, Texter says, my 2018 Honda CR-V has a problem that internet posters call, quote, sticky steering, where the steering wheel needs a little extra nudge to start making a turn. This especially occurs when making small steering adjustments like centering the car in the lane. Have you heard of such a thing, Nick?
Well, that kind of goes in hand with our earlier text message. You know, the power steering pump, whether it's a mechanical, electrical pump, is creating that pressure. That pressure is in the rack and pinion, which gives the assist. There really shouldn't be any hang-up. You know, my concern would be, is there something that's a little bit worn or stiff? whether it's a ball joint, tie rod, you know, something along those lines. So maybe the fluid needs servicing. So I would say when you're in for service, if you notice something like that, these are the types of things that we always forget when we bring the vehicle in. So, you know, make a little journal, have a notepad in your vehicle. Any of that strange stuff that you notice from time to time, good time to bring that up is when you're in for service. Say, hey, I got a little laundry list here of a couple of things I'd like for you to take a peek at. You know, maybe you might find there's nothing to worry about and you can forget about it, or there's something more going on there that you should be made aware of.
Okay. Let's grab a phone call this morning, Nick. Kim, checking in from southern Minnesota somewhere. Kim, thanks for calling in. What is your question for Nick?
I have a 2012 Ford Escape, and the driver's side seatbelt recoil seems to be slowing down. Is there something I can do to improve it?
You know, short of making sure there's no debris, make sure it's not twisted, but that does seem to happen as cars get older, like the recoil spring just kind of wears out. There isn't any kind of fix. They're all kind of enclosed in one component and they're replaced as a whole. So there's nothing that can be done to repair the one you have. You know, like I said, the only thing I can do is make sure there's no debris, make sure it's not twisted. And then, you know, if that's not going to do the trick for you, you might have to have it replaced.
Okay. Thank you for that call. Texter Joan sent this question. When we were having very cold weather this winter, like a lot of people, I got a dashboard light that said I had low tire pressure. The tire pressure is back to normal, but I still have the low tire pressure light coming on when I start the car. Do I have to go into a repair shop to get that turned off?
Well, take one step back. If the light is coming on for just a moment, a lot of times systems in the vehicle are designed as a self-check. So you start the vehicle and you see a variety of indicators that may come on for just a moment or two, but they should go off. You know, when you're driving the vehicle down the road, there shouldn't be any of those warning lights on. If there is, that's telling you that the vehicle's computer system doesn't like what it's seeing. Now, maybe the tire pressures are okay, but maybe there's something wrong with one of the sensors and that information's not getting back to the computer. So if you have a warning light that's staying on or coming on, you know, kind of like I had said previously here, make a note of it. You know, depending on if you notice the vehicle not behaving or operating properly, you know, get it in quickly, but otherwise make a note of it so when you are in for service, they can take a look at some of these things to see if there's something more to it. Maybe it's just a simple reset. Maybe there's some sort of repair or replacement, but you won't know until you have somebody look at it.
And maybe, too, like you've brought up over the years, from time to time, if you have a spare tire, that could be low, and you don't know it.
I can't tell you how many times we've been bit by that. You know, this is what we've done our whole lives, and you're like, why can this light still be on?
Why didn't I think of that?
The spare.
Yeah, it's a possibility. Anyway, something to check out. Very good. Getting a signal here, we need to take a quick break for that forecast. And by the way, it's going to be a warm-up. Looks pretty good this coming week. We'll tell you in detail. Stand by. And then remaining minutes of the Car Care Show. Yeah, send us a text or call us with any kind of a car care question for Nick. 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830 WCCO. And good morning. Welcome back to this portion, the final minutes of CCO's Car Care Show. We're here, by the way, every Saturday, right after the 7 o'clock news break. Nick Stauffel, who runs Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul, is kind enough to help our listeners out every week. We appreciate that. I know, Nick, our listeners do as well. Back to some text, but before we get there, Bev is calling in, I believe, from Farmington this morning. Bev, thanks for waiting. What is your question, please?
Awesome, thanks. I got a curious question for help, if possible. I have a 2004 Toyota Tundra truck. It only has like 144,000 miles on it and been a great vehicle. The little thingamajiggy, the little thing that locks and unlocks the car, which is separate from the key, works great except on the passenger door. And at 78, I have to sort of climb over to manually lock and unlock that door. Is there a battery in there? Is this a big deal? Is this electronics or is this something I got to just live with?
Well, the fob itself, if you're hitting the button and it's unlocking the driver's door, it should be doing the same for the passenger door. So a lot of times you might have to hit it a second time because some cars are designed where you hit it once, it does the driver's door, so it's not unlocking everything, and then you hit it a second time immediately, and it'll unlock the passenger side. Assuming that that's not the case here, there is a little actuator in that door that gets that electric signal that unlocks the door. So if something's happening where one of the doors is operating but the other is not, it makes me think that something separate or individual to that door isn't working. couple other things you could try is if it's power locks on the inside of the vehicle, you can hit that button to see if that allows it to operate. If you're noticing that there's nothing you can do short of lifting the or unlocking the door manually yourself, there's something with that door itself. If it's working maybe from the driver's door unlock button or the electric unlock button, we have something different, maybe a wiring problem somewhere. So there's a couple things or tests we need to do. But I would start with, you know, trying the fob, try it twice. Maybe next time you're in for service, as I mentioned earlier, bring this up and have them take a look at it. They can look a little bit closer for you and make a recommendation.
Yeah, good luck with that, Bev. I've noticed that myself, too. I'll do it once or twice, but then sometimes three times just to make sure. So at least it's something Bev can try, multiple times of hitting that unlock button. I'd like to find out if you get an answer to that, Bev. So when you do check it out and you do get it fixed, let us know how you did that. Texter says this, Nick. I have a car that has automatic windshield wipers. I had my windshield replaced by a third party last winter, and the intermittent wipers no longer work. I've heard that there's some sort of special sealant that needs to be applied to allow the automatic sensors to work. Wondering if that's really the case.
I don't know if it's necessarily a sealant. You know, the windshield needs to be designed for that. So when they replace the windshield, that feature needs to be built into the windshield itself. Not only that, but there might be some programming resetting also. So I would probably check with that third party, tell them what's going on or what has happened. Maybe they can look it up in their record to see what the part number or component number was, see if it is the correct windshield. If it is the correct windshield, maybe you have to check with the dealer or somebody to see if there's any software or any reprogramming to that system to get that function again. My concern is that the wrong windshield was put in, and now you're kind of stuck. So I would see what the recourse is there. You know, I would approach it politically, you know, correct. I wouldn't go in there with my blazing or anything. I would try to, you know, find a common ground, and hopefully you can get that repaired and working again, because it is a nice feature. You don't have to remember when in the middle of a rainstorm.
Yeah, absolutely. Listener wants to know, is a hybrid better in the snow?
I don't think it makes a difference. I think if you have a well-maintained vehicle with good tread on your tires, you know, different makes, models, weights of vehicles, sizes of vehicles all have different advantages and disadvantages. So I don't think a hybrid itself makes it a better snow vehicle. I just think a car with a vehicle with good tires on it makes it a good vehicle in the snow.
Barb sent in a text, said she has 42,000 miles on her 2020 Highlander. How can I, she says, test my tire wear and give me some tips on buying from a reputable tire sales place? What do you think?
Well, you know, the tire tread, there's a depth. You know, they're usually 10 to 11, 30 seconds when they're new. As they wear, that'll shorten. There is a little bar kind of built in to the tread. So as the tires become worn, there's a little cross-section, a little tab there that you can see that'll become more exposed. If you're running your fingers across the tire and there's no divot there, meaning that the tires are worn all the way to that bar, that's telling us that they're due to be replaced. Not just the winter driving, but also spring and summer with the rain. You don't want a hydroplane. So there's, you know, a good tire with good traction is necessity year-round. So I wouldn't say, oh, they're getting pretty worn here, I'll just wait until winter again, because in a hard rainfall, you could end up sliding off the road. As far as what do you do as far as buying tires, you know, I'm always, if you don't know, I like to stick with a brand name. There's a lot of options out there, good, bad, and different. If you're going to a major tire dealer, you know, a business that has lots of locations, they might have an option that's a good option of something that they like. You know, I would hear them out. Maybe I'd, you know, hear their options, check with somebody else, compare them. But typically, if you don't know, I like to stick with a brand that you're aware of or that you've heard of.
Nick, here's another key fob question, which I think is a good one, too. The texter says, I have two key fobs from my Honda Pilot, and one is not working very good. What's the best place to get a new one, and do I need to program it? What would you do in a case like that? Would you try just for giggles a new battery in that one? Or what would you do in that case if one of the two fobs is not working?
I would absolutely try a battery first. It's the easiest and least expensive. Be careful, though. If you haven't taken, you know, watch a couple of videos online, they can be very simple and very complex. So depending on the fob itself, And don't break anything, because the last thing you want to do is force something, break one of these little key fobs, which can be hundreds of dollars. Which segues me into, if you need to replace one, there are a lot you'll see online. You can buy a lot of aftermarket ones. Some work and some don't, so just be careful. You kind of get what you pay for, as we often say. And then finally, you know, I want it to work, I want it to be right, your best plan is buy one from the manufacturer itself. So try the battery. That hopefully will do it. If it doesn't, like I said, you can try some of these aftermarket ones. You might have some success, but ultimately, I think buying one from the original manufacturer is your best plan.
Okay. I was looking at a video, and there was a texture that's kind of related to that in the video, and see if I can recall the whole thing. A guy was saying in his vehicle, he uses 0.16 oil, that viscosity, which is like water, he said. And that's true. It really is thin. But he said, you know what? I thought it would be better in my vehicle, just especially maybe when it gets really hot. It's a 0.20. Now, if you are using another viscosity, we'll just pick this one. 0.16, guy uses 0.20. What can that do, if anything, to the engine?
You know, it's really close. I'm not sure it'll do much. A lot of those viscosity changes have a lot to do with emissions, the fuel economy, you know, controlling friction. I agree, that's a really light, really thin oil. If you do look in the owner's manual, they will have recommendations. And oftentimes, it won't be just one. You know, it might say 0.16 in these types of driving conditions, but this is another option in other driving conditions. So there's a little bit of flexibility there sometimes. But I would not go away from what the manufacturer's recommending. There's a reason they've done it. They've done tons of engineering and testing. You know, and oils have changed, as they always do. You know, everything evolves with time. So I would say look at the owner's manual, as we often tell people. Look what your options are. You know, the 0.20 is probably a little more cost-effective. If it is a viable option, by all means do it. If it doesn't mention it, you can check with the manufacturer or the dealership, see what they say. But most often people are going to say follow what the owner's manual tells you.
And finally, as far as oil goes, I was looking at and reading a lot of car questions and videos about from people like yourself, you know, mechanics, who say they don't believe in that 10,000 or 15,000 mile oil change. They kind of talk about what we talk about as far as synthetic oils, maybe 5,000, maybe 7, but not 10 or longer. You agree?
Well, that's my opinion. I know that the manufacturers have engineers that are really smart and they're way more educated than we are. However, based on our practical life stuff that we see on a daily basis, I think a good quality branded synthetic oil goes 5,000 miles. If your vehicle still uses conventional oil, roll that back to maybe 3,000 miles. But I have a hard time agreeing with something much longer than 5,000 miles.
Yeah, me too. Nick, we have to run. Let's tell folks how to get in touch with Lloyd's Automotive if they need that help.
Yeah, if you need any help or advice, give us a call, 651-228-1316. It's going to be a beautiful week. If you're along Grand Avenue going for a stroll, having lunch or coffee, stop and say hi. We're at 982 Grand Avenue. And as always, Denny, please do check out our website, lloydsautomotive.net.
Absolutely. Great place to visit there on Grand Avenue. Nick, let's talk next week again.
Sounds like a date.
Good deal. Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber. Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.